Okay, this hour we'll talk about, of course, UFOs, UFO healing, and also your ghost stories. Preston happens to be a ghost hunter, and we'll be back with all of that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Preston Dennett with us. Your phone calls for this final hour. Here we go. In your ghost hunting, Preston, did you bring any special equipment?
No, I didn't. I couldn't really afford it. And at the time, you know, that sort of thing was not really that popular or well-known. Now I'm really excited to see a lot of the technology that's being thrown towards this, and I think we're getting a lot of really good results because of it. But for the most part, I have not done it that way. I've spent most of my time, you know, interviewing witnesses in depth and, you know, reading all the books and trying to get a whole handle on this phenomena as a whole.
Of everything you've investigated, what fascinates you the most? What's your favorite?
Well, you know, it's such a wide phenomenon. What interests me the most, what really puzzles me, is how these ghosts are able to move objects, but them being not physical. Obviously, to some extent, they must be partly physical, or there's a non-physical aspect to objects.
You would think so, yeah.
At some point, these things come together. But the way ghosts are able to manifest objects, a good example is this case I investigated involving Connie Lopez is her name. Her husband died. And shortly after he died, she started having oily footprints appearing through her house. This was always a point of contention with them. And she could keep the house as clean as she was able to. And he kept coming back and doing it. And he also appeared as a full-color apparition to his nieces and nephews. So,
what did he want? Was he harassing her or just wanted to let her know he's still around?
I get a lot of cases like that where people, ghosts come back. They just want to be recognized maybe once or twice after they pass on. And after someone loses a loved one, it's not at all uncommon that, you know, they will have at least one experience, maybe a couple.
All right, to the phones we go now. Back we go. We go to Fort Myers, Florida. Thomas, it's your turn. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thank you, George. My question is, my understanding is you have a thinking of aliens and healing mortal beings.
Right.
And that, why would an alien want to heal a mortal being or mastering the elements of this physical world, this natural world that we have? And
what's the benefit of that?
Right. You know, that's something I've really puzzled about. Why are they, you know, with all their technology, why are they coming across and healing a little boy of a head cold, which is, you know, one of the cases I've got. This UFO appears over someone's backyard, and a little boy sees it, and he runs away when it starts sending out a beam of light, and it strikes him. It paralyzes him, kind of halfway falling there, and he sees all these symbols in his head and all these things he can't understand, and then it moves away, and his head cold is gone. I have no idea why they're doing this, but I do know that they've shown a very strong interest in the human body, in humans in general, and in our planet, in the future of our planet. For some reason, maybe they feel connected to us. In some cases, abductees or experiences, if you would prefer to call them that, have been told that they are related to ETs. So I think that might be one of the reasons. You know, we can only speculate and deal with the evidence that we have.
What do you think, back to the USOs, what do you think the sizes might be? What are people describing?
It's a very good question, because you get all different kinds. For the most part, you get that sort of, I'm going to say 20 to 30 foot, you know, 10 to 20 to 30 foot objects. But there are several involving very small objects and a few outliers involving very large objects. One gentleman said he saw, must have been stadium sized, and it rose up. This was down by Venice beach, very, very, very early in the morning. Rose up out of the water, and just tons of water were streaming off of it, and there were much smaller UFOs, which he estimated, you know, were at least 10 feet in diameter, maybe larger, swirling around this thing. So they can get very large.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason why they couldn't if they have, you know, this technology. And speaking of them going in and out of the water, I've got a couple of cases, and I've certainly read of several, where these objects go in and out of land. And so they can move apart solid earth just as easily as water, apparently.
Let's go to Viola in Fairbanks, Alaska. Hi, Viola. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Preston. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Sure
thing. I am a longtime listener, and I am a Coast to Coast insider.
Oh, super.
And it is a staple to my weekly education, should I say.
Sure is.
Anyway, I have a question for Preston. I would like to find out what his theory is on these underground booms that have been going on all over the world, and if he has any ideas or, like I said, theories on if they're related to underground bases or underground UFOs or something like that. And on another note, I think that maybe some of these healings might be a byproduct of just the presence of the electromagnetic frequencies of the UFOs. Because, you know, our body is, you know, neurons and electric and chemical. So maybe some of these healings are unintentional and just a byproduct. But anyway, I'll take my answer off the air. And I love you, George. Thank you so much for all you do. And thanks, Preston. I'll listen in.
All right. Take it away, Preston.
All right. Thanks, Viola. Both interesting points and questions. As far as the EM frequencies coming from UFOs, I think you're right. Several researchers have speculated on that, and I know of at least a couple of cases where UFOs have just flown over people's cars, and, for example, one gentleman was cured of his kidney stones.
Wow.
Or Carl Higdon, he was another one who was cured of a tubercular scar and kidney stones, and a lot of other cures where people are just kind of in the presence of a UFO. So I think there's something to that. Now, these underground booms, I haven't done a lot of research into these.
They're everywhere these days.
I've heard about them, certainly, and I think that there are a lot more underground bases than the public in general is aware of. And certainly, I think the military is involved in a lot of them. There might be ETs. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily it, but I think it's one of the best explanations we've got.
I wonder if the planet's cracking up. Not in laughing wise. I mean, physically cracking up, falling apart.
Well, I suppose anything's possible, and we've seen the footage of that Japan quake with the, you know, the way these crusts move back and forth.
Oh yeah,
for real. You know, we do live on a very volatile planet, and what's interesting is this has been a theme in a lot of UFO encounters where people are taken aboard, and the very most common thing people experience is being examined. This was confirmed by Dr. Robert Bullard, and I think a lot of the people I've talked to say the same thing. But the second most common thing, and this is something I run into a lot, is being given messages or warnings about environmental pollution, nuclear proliferation, these types of things. So I think that speaks to this whole, you know, disaster myth that we're experiencing.
We've got John in Los Angeles, and there you go. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes.
Hi.
Interesting topic.
Sure is.
Yeah. I was in a situation with, I can't go into too many details. I was with it's basically a secured location with armed individuals and myself. And we have this, the logical part of my brain and the rest of us thought that we were kidnapped and, you know, basically hypnotized and these thoughts were in our heads about abduction, because here we are in a secured location where no one could access. We have a guy in an elevated location watching the entire area. And we all had the same weird recurrence in our minds. We talked about it. And what we're missing was really strange. We're missing for 2 hours. Radio dispatch, they're trying to reach us by radio for 2 hours. We just vanished. And it started like this. We saw a large glowing orange object. It looked like a glowing balloon. It was heading toward us. And as it approached us, it had some sort of connection with our thought processes, because when we were looking at it, it would stop us from looking at it. We'd look at it, and then we'd turn around and go, wait a minute, was I just looking at that? We'd turn around again, and before we know it, it's right in front of us. And we were paralyzed. We couldn't even move. It had some sort of grasp on our bodies. So we're just frozen and locked us down. And then they did some medical experiments on us. And we were returned after they were done. And then we went back and we discussed this. We say we all have the same memory, and we're talking about, no, we're probably abducted by, you know, some government agents probably abducted us, put these thoughts in our minds. But later on, one of the guys wrote a report and put it in a report, didn't talk to us. He just did it on his own. He put a report of the whole incident, and he lost his career over this.
Wow, gone.
And so, but the aspects of this were really strange. What's sort of scary is my logical part of my mind thinks, okay, it's probably intelligence agency kidnapped us and did this to us. But the thing is, there's five of us. And then when we're at our facility, there's about 30 people. And whenever I wanted to bring up the scenario, because it's so bizarre and abstract, because we were gone for 2 hours and calling us, looking for us, and we're gone off the face of the earth. And one of the ladies, I was bringing it up, the story, I go, you know, Friday, because it happened on Friday. I goes, you know, Friday, and then this is what really scares me. Whenever I brought it up, a person would open their mouth and start yawning and start literally almost falling asleep. I'm thinking, oh, my God. They've gotten all everybody, because every time you try to bring it up, people start dazing off and start like nodding off. I'm thinking either they put implants in all of us, where whenever we try to bring up the subject, it sort of like shuts us down, so we start to get drowsy and tired. And I couldn't even continue the conversation. I almost passed out, fell off my feet when I just tried to talk about it, started getting sleepy. And I'm thinking, wow, this is a big program. If they got five of us armed guys, they have a tower that didn't say anything, and the people who were around us, we talk about it, and you start literally almost falling asleep. But I was exposed to some extreme technology. It's really weird, because with the medical experiments they're doing on us, was technology that we don't even have yet. This is really unusual. And they're communicating to us. It appeared like English. And it had a bright light on us, so we couldn't see exactly who they were. There's just silhouettes of them, and we see outlines of humanoid people, and they're communicating with us. And what's really weird is in the center, I saw a large being. It could have been a robot machine or something. I don't know, but it was huge. I was just thinking if they use that in case somebody were to break free of their grasp. But have you heard aspects of people being locked down where they can't move? We can move our eyes and our sockets. The only thing we can move, our bodies, we're basically frozen.
And have you had some frightening experiences with that, Preston?
Absolutely. You know, so a lot of the things you're describing to me, I've heard before and are pretty familiar in terms of, being paralyzed and unable to move. That's very common prior and during an abduction experience. And some people are able to experience limited movement. Some not.
What about lost time?
Lost time is very common, and it's unusual for people to remember their experiences fully. And this phenomenon you're talking about afterwards of, you know, people falling asleep and forgetting it and not wanting to talk about it, I've definitely run into that. And that there's some very strong, I think it's hard to say how they're doing it, because we don't know. Could be implants. It could be strong hypnotic suggestions.
What are you getting in terms of reports or response? What seems to be the biggest right now? People are saying what?
Well, you know, each case is different. I think that it all depends on how people interpret it. I'm not sure that there's one particular theme that's, you know, hitting me real strong, other than that abductions are not typically, I think, what people think they are. I'm getting a lot of really bizarre reports that are just not your standard abduction profile. So each case is very individual, I think.
Skype line, Dale in Ontario, Canada. Go ahead, Dale. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks.
Sure.
A couple days after, well, the day after my grandfather died and the funeral and all that, I had a sight when I woke up from my bed that my grandfather was sitting over my bed. And, you know, I figure he was just there saying, you know, he's all good and in a good place. And I told my family about this, and they reported pretty much the exact same. And it was startling at first, but I figure he was just getting a message across.
Yeah, well, I think these are some of the best evidence we have of life after death, and not the only evidence. I mean, we have evidence through mediums, evidence through out-of-body travelers and near-death experiences, but these ghostly visitations are pretty hard to explain as any other way that something survives after death.
But they do exist, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ghosts are absolutely real. I think they're a lot more common and walking around us, in fact, all the time. I don't think they're that far away. They can see us, certainly. There's a veil, apparently, between these dimensions where they can listen and see us. And only if you're sufficiently advanced or able to vibrate, apparently, at a high enough level, are you able to perceive ghosts yourself, you know, in the method of a medium or someone who is clairvoyant.
Okay, back we go. Let's go to Seattle. Dave's there. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi. Preston. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to relate real quickly to you an experience that my girlfriend and I had on an Alaskan cruise that we took last summer. It was actually May of last year. And late one night, it was about 1 a.m., she was out on the balcony of our room, and she was just hanging out, looking at the stars and such. And she came back in, and she said, you know, you aren't going to believe this. I think I saw a UFO. And we kind of, you know, laughed about it and so on, but we sort of left it at that. We didn't really talk about any details of it. And a couple of nights later, it was actually about three nights later, the kind of the roles were reversed, and I was out on the deck, and I was just looking at things, and the sun had just gone down, and it was really nice outside, and I saw something that I couldn't explain either, and I ended up telling her what I saw, which was basically I saw six dots. They were orange points of light, and they were not real bright, but they were kind of small. And they all came down in an arc, and they formed together into one larger orange dot. And that grew in intensity, headed towards the water, and disappeared. And she said, you know, that's really weird. She said, I saw kind of the opposite. I saw two bright lights come out of the water, and they kind of joined together as one bright light, and they kind of shot skyward and disappeared. And I was just curious whether or not, you know, after hearing your other caller from Ketchikan mentioned his experiences. I'm kind of curious now if this is kind of a common sort of sighting or if this is rare, or just you want to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, I wouldn't say it's super common. Certainly there are a lot of cases where UFOs will meld into each other or separate. So that's something that's really amazing that certainly our craft can't do. And and craft coming in and out of the water, well, that's definitely happening a lot more than people think. It's just been underreported, and now we're finally getting a lot more reports coming in.
Any pictures, any videos of these craft?
Not great ones that are, you know, there's a couple. There's one on the cover of a Wendell Stevens book, which is about a UFO.
The late Wendell Stevens, right?
Yeah, which is a UFO contact from undersea, which details an abduction case, which involves people who were taken to a base off Hialeah, Florida. And the cover of that book does show an object coming out of the water, and there are some photos of some objects coming out of near the water.
Post some of those, if you can, Preston, on your website. We're going to come back with final phone calls, yours, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk for a couple hours about dark shadows, the old one and the new one, right here on Coast to Coast AM, followed by those Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines. Plus, don't forget, full moon on Saturday night, and the moon will be very close to planet Earth. I think there could be an earthquake. We'll talk to Jim Berkland about that sometime in our news segment on Coast to Coast AM. Preston, when you teach classes on the paranormal, what do people really want to learn? What are they after?
Well, that, of course, depends on you know, what subject we're teaching. Some people, I taught classes on UFO history, and people just really wanted to get a general history of that, or on out-of-body experiences and how to do that. It all depends, you know, on what people are looking for, and I try and tailor the class towards that.
All right, let's go to the phones. Dan in Peekskill, New York. Hey, Dan, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, is this the same Preston Dennett?
That's his name, but what do you mean the same?
Yeah, Preston, it's an honor to speak with you, sir. You did a beautiful article on page 3-9 in the MUFON Journal, the Mutual UFO Network, in October of 96 on UFO healings. I just figured your guest and George would like to know.
That's got to be him.
Yeah, it's a beautiful article. And UFO healings, among hundreds of other reasons, is one of the reasons why I cite UFOs are not demonic. They're not fallen angels because they would not heal people. And there's a whole bunch of other reasons, but this is one of the reasons, UFO healings, that I cite to dismiss that. But this is a beautiful article, and I do believe people are definitely, without a doubt, being healed by ETs. So I know Preston wants to talk about the article that he put in the journal
right
back in October of 96.
Let's ask him. Preston, you remember that one?
I do, yeah. I put some of the better cases in there, some of the ones with better evidence, including, like, I think one that I included in there was a case investigated by John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm. I remember John. I knew him from Missouri.
Yeah, he was a prominent abduction researcher.
Yes.
He uncovered a case involving a gentleman who was cured of colorblindness. Really dramatic.
He was very heavy into it. He was way ahead of John Mack at the time. Then he just gave it up. I don't know. I've heard he's trying to trickle back in. But, I mean, he was way out there with this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, I think, for researchers when they realize, you know, that it's hard to move this subject forward. There's a very strong ridicule factor, very strong skepticism factor. There's not a lot of money being thrown at this. The government is ignoring it to a large extent and covering it up at the same time.
You know, everybody will ask this question, so I might as well ask you. Why don't they make themselves known? Why the cloak of secrecy? Why hide in the ocean? Why just not show up?
Well, can you imagine that might not be really a great thing for us? A lot of people are pretty immature and might, you know, I don't want to say panic because I think that's an old excuse that everyone bring up with the War of the Worlds, radio broadcasts and all that. I don't think people would panic, but to a large extent, they have shown up. And what do? Our reaction has always been pretty much the same. We chase after them, and we shoot at them, and we try to shoot them down. This is how we've reacted to a large extent. Now, I think they are showing themselves and just not going away in certain cases, like the Phoenix Lights. There was a huge wave over Mexico City, the Hudson Valley wave. There's these huge, you know, what I call super waves, where they're clearly putting on displays, and it's, I think, going to escalate, and we're going to see, you know, more of this type of activity in the future.
Dothan, Alabama, it's Vivian's turn. Thanks for holding so long, Viv. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much.
Sure thing.
I really appreciate it, George and Preston. I was holding for a ghost story.
Okay.
My first encounter was like the other gentleman, with my deceased grandfather. But I'd never had another ghost for many, many years. My daughters and I are all psychic, and I had dealt with a lot of different things over the years and learned how to astral plane. But one night, I had moved into the same apartment building I had lived in once before. Instead of being on the second floor, I was on the third floor. And I was trying to get to sleep, and I just couldn't quite get over the itch. And as I was starting to do that, all of a sudden, all my kitchen cabinets were being slammed shut, the drawers open. You could hear the silverware shifting, and they were being slammed shut. And I was scared to death. I thought someone was in my apartment.
What?
Well, I finally got off the nerve, looked around, couldn't find anything. Except on my way down the hallway, I saw an orange glow coming out of my kitchen area. And it continued for a very, very long time. And he would also go into my bathroom on the main hallway and do the same thing. And I just sort of, in my own mind, I just named him George. I said, George,
thanks.
Cut it out. I'm trying to sleep. Go away. come back while I'm going to work. You know, you can slam my doors all you want. When I do my drawers, you just go away. And he'd stop. I was very surprised. And then I was engaged, and my future husband, and I did marry him, and he moved in with me into my apartment, did not believe in ghosts. He never had, and he said he never will. Well, one night, George was being rather active and started out in the bathroom, and the orange glow was more intense than I'd ever seen before. And, you know, it was like it lit up part of the bedroom. And I was sending him these mental telepathy psychic things saying, stop it, stop it, stop it. John doesn't believe in this. All of a sudden, he stopped, but the orange glow continued in the hallway. And I put myself back down on my pillow, and I said, George, go away, you know, in just a low tone. And for the first time in over a year, George actually appeared to me in the upper left-hand corner of my door and my doorway to our bedroom. And I was so shocked. And I was going, George, go away. Not now. And pretty soon, my husband woke up. And he opened his eyes and he says, oh, my God, what's that? And I said, that's my ghost, George. And he sat there with his jaw hanging open like you wouldn't believe. Well, we discussed this at some length, and I had a dinner party, and I talked about how we had a ghost who visited me frequently. But he was very good. I sensed the goodness in this man. And one day I was coming down to the second floor, and someone I knew came out of my first apartment that I lived in there. And she asked me, have you had any strange goings on in your apartment? I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, one of the attendants in this apartment a few years ago died in the apartment, and it was about 3 days before this elderly gentleman had been found. And I said, gee, that's really interesting, because I have a rather regular ghostly figure coming into my place and making noises and lights. And my daughter, as I said, she was young at the time. She did it. She saw him first. She kept saying, Mommy, come in here.
But you never felt that you were at risk or anything?
No, not with him. I've experienced that only a couple times when I've walked into a house. I felt imminent danger, and I have several guardian angels, I call them, and they told me to get out, and I did. But anyway, I had been up late one night, and I put my glasses on this drop leaf table in my dining room as I passed from the living room to the dining room back to my bedroom. And the next morning I got up, got ready for work, and I was doing lots of paperwork at work, and I needed my glasses, and my glasses were gone. I tore my apartment apart looking for those glasses, and they were nowhere to be found.
Well, see, you also had a mischief maker there. Preston, I want to know, and thank you, Viv, for your story. We'll take a few more calls here. The time is rapidly going by. What is the best ghost story you've ever been on or heard?
Oh, that's a really hard question, because that's hard to choose from. I'll pick one that I find really interesting. It involved a family that was having some really intense ghostly activity, which started with just objects disappearing.
or not being able to be found and then appearing in different areas. And then one time they were all in the kitchen area, and the wife dropped the car keys and right in the middle of the kitchen floor, and all three, the husband, the wife, and the daughter, watched the keys drop and disappear right when they hit the floor, at which point the back door opened and closed by itself. And this was the sort of things that were going on in this home, and it just got escalated to a point where it was really intense. One time they tried to open their daughter's bedroom door, and no one was in there. They should have been able to open the door, but the dresser had been moved across the doorway, making it impossible to move it, impossible to open the door. So that was a really intense case.
Let's go to John in Parkland, Washington, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, John.
Yes. Years ago, I used to be a flight engineer in the Air Force, and I used to get my overseas sorties by flying up on the Alaska chain to resupply ADAC in Shimia. And one night, we went in there, and when we loaded up and left, we headed down the runway to the south, making a left-hand turn back to Anchorage, and the Anchorage controller called us and said, did you see any UFO activity? And we said, no, we didn't, because we don't have no rear view mirrors in the C-141. And he says, well, he says, six UFOs followed you down the runway.
Six.
Interesting. Wow. And so next month I was in there, and same maintenance man was on the ground, and I asked him, I said, what was the deal with this UFOs following us down the runway? And he said, oh, we're not supposed to talk about it. I said, well, what happened? He says, well, he says, six of them followed you down the runway as you made your left-hand turn. He says, six of them went out over west of the island over the water, and then two of them went around the other side of the island, and then the island was hit by a 4.2 to 4.3 earthquake. I said, oh, that's interesting. He says, yeah, except it was the earthquake was centered in a building. And I said, geez, that must have been devastating. He says, yes, it was. He says, it was the control building for the Cobra Dan radar site, which is the over-the-horizon radar. And this is a national asset, and there's three of them. There's one at Shimia, one at Thule, and one at Mildenhall in England. And they're the ones that were able to pick up intercontinental ballistic missiles once they're about 15 seconds off the ground, track them for another 15 and see where they're going to go to. And so anyways, they knocked the Cobra Dan radar site out for 3 days. They used to keep an eyeball on that island with chrome dome B-52s back when they used to fly those airborne alert airplanes, and they used to fly 150 miles across from each other around that island 24/7, and because it was that important. And so anyways, they knocked the thing down. We talked to the crew for a while once we got back to McCord, and what would they do this for, you know? And I said, well, I don't think it was the Cobra Dan radar site that they were after. I think it was the laser gun that they were after.
You're right.
And the laser gun out there at the time was the most powerful laser in the world. And I don't know if you recall when they took a picture of the moon in its dark phase by lighting it up with a laser gun. They did that with that laser, from what I understand.
Wow.
And
powerful.
And if you shoot something out in a space and you miss, that beam of light just continues on. Well, just consider if you happen to have the ability to cruise around in outer space, and all of a sudden something like that goes whizzing by you, high energy laser, or it hits something that is close to you or dear to you, you're going to have the ability to trace that right back to where it came from, you know. And their science officer, you know, like Spock, would say, well, it came from this island on this third planet from the sun here, or from that star, you know, and they'd be able to go right back to it. Well, those guys that from RCA that used to run that laser, they were packed up and gone up to the main part of the base and drinking beer by 7 o'clock in the evening. And so the little building that laser was in, it was just like a tar paper garage that about maybe 100 feet long, nondescript or anything like that. And so they just left it alone. They didn't bother with it. But we provoked these people, and they knocked our bejabbers out of one of our national assets.
We've heard stories, too, though, you know, how they shut down missile silos and everything else. They can do whatever they want to do. My big question to you, Preston, as we wrap this up, how do we know, as David Jacobs has said, that they're not out to do something a little evil here?
Well, we don't. I think that we have to judge on the evidence that we have. And to a large extent, they have already invaded, I think. Certainly, abductions are very pervasive. But I think the best evidence we have that they're not evil or here to take us over is that their behavior falls under the same spectrum of human behavior. And if I were to try to prove that humanity was a benevolent species, I would have a much harder time than I think I would with the aliens. And the fact that they've been around for as long as they have and have not taken over, surely they have access to other planets if they want. What do we have that they would want so much that they would need to take over us?
Do you think we are they?
I think that there's a relationship there, definitely, that's probably a lot stronger than we realize. But I don't know, you know, I don't know that.
Well, that is one of those perplexing questions. Preston, thank you so much for being on Coast to Coast, and good luck with your work. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.